Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. Dave will be joining us a little later on in the program, but we do have Wendy Wilson joining us here for the first segment of the program. And in order for her to tell us and give us so much information, I have to do the market report first. So let's go ahead and get that completed. And this is a market report where I kind of like to ignore today. But, you know, I won't. I'm here. So gold again had another tough day, down 40 bucks, a little over 2% at 1860. Silver today, a little bit of a little more tougher day. 2282 for silver, down a buck 65. Platinum was down $32 at 842. Palladium was down one, 2242. And let me guess, you know, we all know the dollar is stronger, 0.40 at 94.37. So it really is the U.S. dollar's rise temporarily. I mean, all of this is temporary, ladies and gentlemen. So the rise is kind of fueling the gold price pullback. But is that the first time you heard that? I think I've been saying that for months, that they're not going to let the dollar drop without a fight, and that if they do bring it back, there was no way the dollar was in free fall at any time. So again, this is to be expected. You shouldn't be surprised or shocked, and you should be taken advantage of these lower prices. So with that said, crude oil was down 0.16 at 39.64, and you have the paper markets today. You know, some of the final numbers are coming through, but the Dow is down almost 2% at 525 at 26,763. The NASDAQ was down 330 points, down a little over 3%, 10,632. The S&P was down 78 at 3,236, and that was 2.37%. 10-year yield, 0.68%, still below that 70, trending between, oh, I don't know, we've seen really in the past couple of months between 0.65 and 0.70, but, you know, so no big shocks there. Asian, European markets, they were a little stronger overnight, and we'll be talking much about this and how business activity is slowing. Again, raising some fears over the economy, but this is not new to you. It shouldn't be, our listeners, because this is what we talk about every day. But we have Wendy Wilson joining us to talk to us about our health today. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melanie. And I'd say hello, Dave, but he's not here yet, right?
I am.
I heard him.
Yes.
I am. Hello.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to talk about, get this, remember we've been talking about how they're going to track your compliance with, let's say, a vaccine like COVID. Remember we were talking about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was kind of jesting about things, but I kind of think I found the answer to this. This segment's called the Band-Aid Vaccine that tracks you, because vaccines have significantly changed in the last 70 years, and with the assistance of technology, we have kind of a wealthy individual, actually, with no medical training or experience, is actually funding and directing a lot of research in this vaccine field of medicine. And we're talking about Bill Gates, and he's injecting, but no pun intended, his technology into the vaccine treatments. And we've heard speculations on the use of vaccines to control the public in their daily lives, such as, you know, access to communities, employment, travel, finance, and other fundamental aspects of living. So that we also have raised some questions on how this control would work and how it would be managed and implemented. How would the vaccine compliance be tracked to the point of denying those of non-compliance, denying them their freedom? So I've kind of joked about the Scarlet Letter a little bit on that scenario, but seriously, how could technology be used to hammer the population into strict vaccine compliance for further control. And I think people are kind of leery of vaccines that might be having chips in them. So recently, the University of Pittsburgh, Melody and Dave, this was the medical center there. They had this. They have this life-changing medicine division, and they released a vaccine vehicle for the COVID-19 serum. So we've all seen, you know, the scary cartoons with the images of the large syringes to implant microchips into people. But I think the public's on the lookout for that. And this is the University of California also reporting this past August in 2020 that only 60% of Americans would consider getting the COVID-19 vaccine. So if these folks saw this larger-than-life syringe coming at them, I believe people would run for it. So therefore, I think any type of tracking instrument in your vaccine has got to be more subtle, to the point that people don't know it was included in the vaccine. So if you have been to the drugstore and you've looked at bandages, there are many different types. There's the waterproof bandages, the non-stick type, and the clear ones. So here's the University of Pittsburgh. They're presenting a fingertip-sized bandage that contains a vaccine that is clear and so light that most people would not even bat an eyelash. So the research on this fingertip bandage did get published in the August 2020 journal, The Lancet. So I've reported on these types of bandages, research going back to 2016, how the vaccine delivery vehicles have changed, and many are a type of topical bandage, and they have small barbs, like hundreds of little mosquitoes that would penetrate the skin to deliver the vaccine. So they're called microneedles, and they cannot be seen with the naked eye. So they can be put onto a Band-Aid or a bandage, and you would never know it was there. So the microneedle patches that I reported on back in 2016 and 18 were much larger. About the size of the palm of your hand was the bandage, and then they had little needles on there. And they were a bit larger than the ones they have today, too. So through this technology, they've shrunk the patches, and they've also reduced the size of the needles to be included on a fingertip-sized Band-Aid with 400 microneedles on them, on a fingertip Band-Aid. Think about that. This is a quote from the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center that was involved in the research. They said, an array of 400 tiny needles on a fingertip-sized patch delivers spike protein pieces into the skin where the immune system is the strongest. The patch is applied like a Band-Aid, and the needles, which are made of sugar and protein, dissolve into the skin. Okay. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The Journal of Geopolitic and International Relations published a report September 2020 in which it says the Bill Gates has funded the research to produce an invisible quantum tattoo that can be hidden in vaccines, and that is being used now with the COVID-19 vaccine. So people that are prone to getting tattoos most likely, you know, wouldn't be alarmed, but maybe curious about how this works. So the quantum vaccine stores medical history and the vaccine compliance. So how does that work, especially if it's on the fingertip Band-Aid, right? Well, the serum contains a new type of dye that is made of nanocrystals, also called quantum dots. And these dots will be in the spikes, and that will dissolve into the skin layer where they'll remain for about 5 years. So the dye will leave a marker that can be read by a smartphone that has a special infrared light on it. And this is how authorities would know you've complied with getting the vaccine. So the tattoo can't be seen on the surface, but once an infrared light is shown on it, it shows up. Next something?
That really is incredible.
Well, the journal...
And this has already been...
It's pretty much ready to roll. The Journal of Geopolitics and International Relations says this: Bill Gates and MIT researchers have discovered a clandestine way to record your vaccination history, store the data in a type of pattern or tattoo in ink that's invisible to the naked eye and is all hidden in the vaccine. End of quote. So, Kevin McHugh, he's a PhD at MIT, he's a professor in the bioengineering area, he says this technology could enable the rapid and anonymous detection of patient vaccination history to ensure every child is vaccinated. So what they do is, you want to just hold on a minute to this, because all this sounds very plausible, but how can the dye record your medical history and your vaccine? Well, the MIT scientists published how they did this in the journal called Science Translational Medicine. And what they did is they used copper quantum dots to create what they call an on-patient medical record. So the copper dots emit light in an infrared spectrum. The dots are also encapsulated in a biocompatible microparticle forming spheres 20 microns in diameter, and this keeps the dye in place, and it's hidden under your skin. So the needles on the fingertip patch are 1.5 millimeters long, and when they start to dissolve, then they release the vaccine serum and also the micro dots in just 2 minutes. So all that happens in 2 minutes. And these vaccine patches can be customized into different needle patterns to identify the type of vaccine you're given. So this is your medical tattoo verifying you got the vaccine, and it is an on-patient record. It's right there. You're carrying your record with you.
Really is scary stuff. But didn't you say it just lasts 5 years, though?
The dots last 5 years. So when they fade, it's time for a booster. See.
What happens to all that old info? Is it, well, it's already stored, right?
Yeah, it should be stored. Well, the cloud. Well, the thing is, so they can change the dots, or the micro dots on the needles. So let's say only some of the needles have a micro dot, so they make a pattern. Maybe they make the pattern 666. Think about it.
Yeah.
Well, here's what Robert Langer, he's with MIT, says: it's possible someday that this invisible approach could contain new possibilities for data storage, biosensing, and vaccine applications that can improve how medical care is provided, particularly in the developing world. Well, this technology is really prime for abuse, obviously, and the fact that a vaccine can be administered without a person's knowledge. The people of Africa already know about the WHO and Bill Gates and their vaccines. When they, you know, come a running, they just go the other way because they don't want to get the vaccines because, you know, a lot of kids are getting sick. So with Band-Aid vaccines, all these agencies have to do is distribute what looks like a bandage. And evidence that these quantum dots are going to be used in the COVID-19 vaccine was revealed in the release of a paper titled Quantum Dots as a Promising Agent to Combat COVID-19. It was in the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health, June 26, 2020 issue. And in the conclusion of the report, it stated this: using quantum dots to target COVID-19 with increased drug release profiles, caution should be exercised to avoid renal filtration and other side effects. So what does it do to the kidneys? Renal means kidneys.
Yeah, it does.
So the researchers are really not sure what COVID-19 quantum dots vaccines will be, if they'll be beneficial. Here they're stating also in the Journal of Geopolitical Politics and International Relations, they say, the development of antiviral nanomaterials by surface engineering with enhanced specificity might prove valuable to combat this novel virus. So this is a nanomaterial Band-Aid vaccine. It's a tool to incorporate big data and ultimate control, really. So the technology is going to evolve and encompass an even bigger picture. Here's what the Journal of Geopolitics says again. It says, quote, the Bill Gates Foundation has developed technology called TrustScore. It's a war on the use of cash and the dual potential for the surveillance on vaccine compliance, which could mean people are locked out of their banking based on their TrustScore. So they're wanting to link your vaccine compliance to TrustScore, which is almost like China's social score.
I was just thinking and that the way, same thing.
Mm-hmm. And that way, if you're not compliant with your vaccine, you're locked out of your financial area, where it would fulfill prophecy, you can't buy, sell, or trade.
Yep.
So, you know, so, and you know, I get calls on this a lot, and I'm not saying that this is what's how they're going to deliver it, but it just looks like it's very plausible. The dots seem to connect pretty well. Basically, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, if you're an accident victim, you go to the hospital and you're unconscious and they give you this bandage without your knowledge, without accepting it, or maybe you're in a nursing home, you know, something of that nature, you have no idea that's been given to you, you know?
I have a doctor client, I shared this on this story, and I'll be quick so you can finish up, on the West Coast, and this was a couple years ago. And he was telling me he had a patient, came out of surgery. He was looking at the chart, and he saw that there was a particular medication subscribed. And he didn't prescribe it.
Yeah.
And here it was the hospital that the patients were all to receive this. I can't recall what, I don't know if it was a vaccine or some sort of medication. And he went to him, he says, I did not prescribe this. Mm-hmm. And he was able to stop it because he hadn't had a chance to talk to the patient. So this is probably already going on. And I believe this doctor 100%.
Yeah.
And so it's it fits
yeah.
in.
Well, I mean, any opportunity to experiment, I think they'll take the opportunity to do
mm-hmm.
so.
Yes.
But there is a way to reverse things that get injected into the skin. There's a way to reverse that. We do it with snake bites. We do it with spider bites. We do it with, you know, bees. Any venom. If you can reverse venom, you can reverse this. So we use the topical poultice, and then we use as a backup the blood cleanser, anything that skips by. So we try to reverse and neutralize the vaccines that way. And if people are interested, then give us a call at Apothecary Herbs. Those two items are included in the pandemic kit as well, but you can purchase them separately. And we get a lot of people in the medical profession purchasing them in the fall because of the flu vaccine they have to get to keep their jobs, you know. So scary time we live in, really is.
It certainly is. And Wendy, give us your information, please.
Sure. Our toll-free is 866-229-3663. The number is working. 866-229-3663. And thepowerherbs.com is the web address, thepowerherbs.com. So just be on the lookout and be alert and keep looking up and praying, right?
Absolutely. That's, yeah, you're right. This is certainly frightening times, scary times. And it just, you know, this technology is... Oh, I don't know. That's another program, and we're out of time. So thank you, Wendy, and
sure.
We look forward to your report next week, and we'll be back in just a few short minutes.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Just a beautiful day here on the eastern shore of Maryland. Sun out, another day with no clouds in the sky. I don't know what happened to those clouds. Something must have happened. I don't know. It's just beautiful, and it makes you feel good. And maybe that's God's way of prepping us for winter. I have a feeling it's going to be a really cold winter, Dave. But hey, that's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong. But I'm usually not wrong in my predictions. Not often. But anyway, let's go ahead and let's talk about, stocks dropped again today. Of course, this is from some warnings from several Federal Reserve officials. We talked a little bit about yesterday for the need for more fiscal stimulus to lift the world's largest economy from the recession. We saw the S&P 500 extended its September slide as Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, reiterated that his view that there's a long way to go for the economic rebound. That's going to require more support. We talked about the Vice Chair Richard Clarida alongside the regional Fed presidents Charles Evans and Loretta Mester also cited the importance of fiscal policy to bolster the recovery. Fed Bank of Boston President Eric Rosengren offered a particularly pessimistic outlook on the economy's ability to bounce back quickly without any further aid. New York Life economist Laura Goodwin said markets are digesting and grappling with this idea that the growth expectations that investors have might not materialize. And again, that's no kidding, Sherlock. Dave, we talk about all the jobs that are lost here and the ones that aren't coming back. But when you look at this on a global basis, the damage to labor markets, is proving to be a lot worse than anticipated. Now, this is according to the International Labor Organization. They also see a much slower rebound later this year than others have been talking about. The ILO, which is the International Labor Organization, said that global working hour losses so far this year have been considerably larger. In the second quarter, working hours were 17% lower compared with the end of 2019. Now, when you figure that out, that's equivalent to almost 500 million jobs. Let that sink in. That's up from 400 million estimated in June. Global working hour losses are expected to amount to 8.6% in the fourth quarter, equivalent to 245 million full-time jobs. Certainly better than the 500 million, but it's still devastating to these people and their families and the communities. And if those numbers are right, which I highly doubt that they are, I don't know how they keep track in some of these third world nations. I can assure you the accounting is, if we have miscalculations, I can't imagine what third world countries would be. The ILO also estimates the labor income losses around the world, excluding the offset from government stimulus and relief programs, has amounted to $3.5 trillion so far.
That's a lot of groceries, Melody. While that situation or at least a number of people expect that situation will improve in the second half, or by the end of the second half of this year. The outlook's also worsened, and in places worsened considerably since the end of June. The destruction in the fourth quarter, as mentioned, will be equivalent, again, to 245 million jobs. And that's in a baseline scenario, up from 140 million estimated in June. But under a pessimistic outcome, the fallout could amount to the equivalent of more than 500 million job losses. And that's astounding. Now, these revisions partly reflect the increase in global infection rates as the summer came to a close, which means a greater economic impact in the second half of the year than the ILO previously assumed. The ILO also said there's been greater damage to jobs in developing economies where there's less opportunity for home working and on informal work, particular concern for the long term. The ILO said the decline in employment has led to an increase in inactivity, and that could leave many people cut off from the labor market, as well as slow any job rebound and further increase inequality all around the world.
And, you know, I mean, that's one of the things, Dave, you know, when people aren't working and jobs aren't coming back, I mean, you put fear into people along with a little bit of hunger. I mean, we're still blessed in this nation, but a lot of these other countries, I don't know what countries are included in the, for the International Labor Organization. There'll be a lot of countries where the people will go hungry a lot faster. And yeah, they want to feed their children and they want to work. So people are put in that position, they will pretty much accept anything. And, when you look at different types of jobs, you have high-paying jobs. They don't seem to be getting refilled as fast as others. The high-wage jobs early on, it walloped hiring across the wage spectrum and in every sector. The virus, the pandemic. Now states have opened up and the lower wage retail and restaurant jobs, they've slowly come back, but you're still looking at the higher paying jobs are still lagging. Postings for the highest paying jobs on the site Indeed are down 24% from last year, even though most of the work in this wage bracket, you know, also can be done from home. Compare that with the low wage jobs down just 12% and the middle wage jobs down 18%. Jed Kolko, chief economist at Indeed, believes the decline in postings for high-paying work is likely due to the fact that tech and finance companies are adjusting their hiring plans to cut costs amid this recession. High-wage sectors often think differently about hiring. It can cost them more to fire and hire than it does low-wage sectors. And there's also less churn. People are less likely to leave their jobs in the middle of a pandemic. And, you know, so you have companies don't have to look for new talent to replace employees who might have left. As we discussed last week, businesses of all sizes have been positioning themselves for an increasingly competitive landscape by doing everything they can do to ramp up productivity and cast off excess costs, Dave.
Yeah, it's, a lot of these savings are coming from these job cuts and adding new ones more slowly, particularly at the high wage end. And this is coming as companies are, looking to invest in new technology and what the Carlyle Group calls intangibles. Again, we talked about this last week, but intangibles are things like R&D, software, patents, inventory management technology, customer acquisition software. They're meant to increase efficiency and dampen the practical impact from cutbacks in other areas. But you know what? There's just nothing like a good paying job. And Tim Ryan, who is a senior partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, says regardless of sector, most of them would tell you that they operate in a hyper-competitive environment. And there's been this ongoing focus and search for productivity and ways to drive down costs to be more competitive. Not sure when we're going to see the results of that, Melody. Perhaps we'll start seeing it later this year, depending on what happens here and abroad. Perhaps it won't be until next year, the year after, or the year after that. But here's the bottom line. I think this bears repeating, that past increases in the intangible share of corporate outlays, expenses, have been associated with slower recoveries in employment. And if that relationship holds true this cycle, a return to, I hate the term full employment because of what it connotes, but we'll use the government term full employment. You can decide what it means for you in the U.S., maybe a lot further off than late next year or 2022 or 2023 with a recovery in GDP. Patience, I'm not sure it abounds. We'll see what all of this ongoing joblessness sows in the weeks and months ahead.
And you know, there's so many predictions about this election, and I mean, I shake my head most of the time with what's going on and who we have to choose from. But we now know that the 2020 election is the most expensive event risk on record. You have insurance bets on implied volatility 6 times their normal level. You know, and you know, we're hearing, where they're telling us already that it could take days or possibly a week or more to count the record number of expected mail-in balance and declare a winner. I just always find that hard to believe. I mean, if that's the best that we can do, they should have found a better job of doing this, find a better way to do this before, you know, waiting to the last minute. But anyway, that's another topic. But again, it's just in part of, you know, when we think about Wall Street not getting the election results in a timely manner, how that will be destabilizing, especially in light of how divided the country appears to be. This comes from a strategist out of DRW Trading. They think that the stock market moves will be violent intraday and the prevailing trend will likely be down. So, you know, we have issues with the Supreme Court nomination. I mean, it's all of these little things that don't seem like a lot, but they will increase market volatility. Even with the passing of a phase 4 stimulus package, I saw, Dave, where I guess they did pass a resolution in order to keep the government going so they don't shut it down today.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
We're going to talk about that later. So that takes away a little bit of volatility, but it's still there in the background.
Very little. That was expected. It's the lack of stimulus that's driving.
That's true. And you're absolutely correct. That is true. It's the stimulus. But how long are they going to be able to continue to give the stimulus? Don't know. So Bill Callahan of investment company Schroeder says whether or not we get that stimulus is paramount for market stability. Well, you know they're going to get it. And they don't want to hurt Wall Street. My heavens, no. We don't want to do that, Dave.
Well, perhaps that's the one and only factor that could drive Congress and the White House toward a compromise on a stimulus package, either before the election before this Congress adjourns at the end of the year. And we've seen that, I mean, even with all of the monetary stimulus from the Fed, that other day-to-day issues still have an impact, either in what happens or what people say. And we still have 30 million Americans on unemployment. And U.S. companies, at least this year so far, filing bankruptcy at the fastest pace ever. Now, again, you know, certainly what happens on November 3rd could have an impact on what happens, at least beginning after next January 20th, depending on whether it's a Trump or Biden victory. But we won't know that, and certainly the Supreme Court nomination, the timing of that in particular, is going to create more volatility in the short run. I think that if you're unsure of the paper markets, ladies and gentlemen, or if you have a bunch of cash right now sitting around for whatever reason, I think now's the time you may want to be considering more seriously than usual about buying the safest and most reliable investment out there, gold and silver. People who listen to our show regularly know the number. For others, it's 1-800-375-4188. Melody, as we say, we live in interesting times.
And, you know, yeah, we've had some pretty big pullbacks in gold of late. But if the only reason you bought gold and silver, and never expected it to go down, and you're upset now, then you don't understand what gold and silver is really there for, when why the importance of owning it. And that's what we said yesterday. We talk every day about the importance of fundamentals. I mean, we can sit here all day long and talk about how high the prices are going to go, and you get all wound up then if it drops and get discouraged. Don't get discouraged. Government hates gold, period. Larry Kudlow hates gold. They want a strong dollar. Why do you think Kudlow was out just, Kudlow was still denying it. Oh, we don't need a stimulus for a V-shaped recovery. Really? Really, Larry? We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today
today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Let's go ahead and talk about the, Dave, the House passes the bill to avert the government shutdown.
Yeah, you know, as Melody and Butch probably mentioned on yesterday's program, the House passed a stopgap funding bill to keep the government operating through December 11th. It's a pretty bipartisan number of 359 to 57. That vote came after both parties in Congress and officials at the White House struck a deal to provide aid to farmers as well as food assistance for low-income families. The temporary spending bill now goes to the Senate for a vote before the fiscal year ends next Wednesday. Final passage would avert a government shutdown just before the November 3rd general election. In addition to funding most government agencies, the deal provides $30 billion for the Department of Agriculture that the administration as well as farm state lawmakers had sought. In return, the Dems got almost $8 billion extra for a pandemic program to feed children who normally receive school lunches. That's an increase from the $2 billion Democrats initially suggested they'd accept.
And you know what, the stimulus that everybody needs and wants so bad probably couldn't get done until this was done.
Yes.
So the stimulus would come, will probably come pretty soon then, if that was the case. At a campaign event last week, we had President Trump. He announced that he was going to draw $13 billion in aid from the department to help rural areas, which are important, of course, to his reelection. Democrats from farm states and those in narrowly divided districts pushed Pelosi to include the farm money. I mean, yeah, these are all negotiations just so they can get what they want for the stimulus and so forth. Continued standoff would have risked the clock running out on the government funding. That's not going to happen during an election year. You know, it's just not going to happen. So, anyway, if the stopgap bill is finalized, lawmakers will try to complete work on the 12 annual appropriations bills for fiscal 2021 in the post-election lame duck session in November and December. So far, the Senate hasn't drafted any of the bills, and there are likely a battle ahead overpaying for, you know, the wall and replacing military funds that were taken out to pay for the wall last year, Dave.
Yes.
Oh, we're going to the moon?
Oh, Levity is Gold, ladies and gentlemen, our weekly segment. Yeah. Today we're talking about gender equality on the moon, that is. NASA has revealed, in fact, they said just the other day that it plans to send a woman to the moon for the first time in 2024. Space agency shared its new Artemis plan, describing the first lunar mission since 1972, this time aimed at sending both a man and the first woman to Earth, our closest neighbor. The plan, let's see, said sending human explorers 250,000 miles to the moon, then 140 million miles to Mars requires a bold vision. Effective program management, funding for modern systems development, and mission operations, plus support from all corners of our great nation and our partners around the world. That's what NASA said in its introduction to the Artemis plan, which explains that the agency has been fine-tuning moon exploration methods over the years. Now, NASA says the multi-pronged Artemis plan shows that it's focused on achieving the goal of initial landing by, again, 2024, with what it calls acceptable technical risks, while simultaneously working toward long-term lunar exploration in the mid to late 2020s. The choice for 2024 is not arbitrary, NASA says, but rather the most ambitious date possible, and our success at the Moon and later at Mars will be grounded in our national goals and robust capabilities. I guess they're referring to more testing on the style of lunar rocket that was just successfully launched to and brought back astronauts from the International Space Station a few months ago. Now, NASA says when Artemis 3 lands, the first woman and next man on the moon in 2024, America will presumably once again demonstrate a new level of global space leadership. So we'll see. From there, they plan human exploration of Mars. So, womankind on the moon, Melody, are you game? You want to be the first?
No, thank you. I'm happy with my feet planted on this dirt.
We'll watch it together then. In the coming years.
But when you think about, you know, our economy and what we think is going to happen in the next couple of years, I'm not so sure. I mean, usually, you know, NASA is one of the first places that they cut funding. So unless the Artemis is going to, I don't know, be more of a private project.
This particular report didn't say. I assume you're correct that it will be that'll be a joint venture, but largely funded by the private rocket ship companies.
And I can't imagine how they're going to get to Mars that is 140 million miles.
Are we there yet? A feat of monumental proportion. the nine-month road trip. Well, one way, anyway.
That's all it takes is 9 months?
I think that's based on their unmanned voyages there so far.
That's interesting, 9 months. I thought it would take longer than that to go 140.
Yeah, I know. You divide that up. That's a significant speed.
Yeah.
I hope you don't get dizzy. Don't look out the windows.
And as I said, are we there yet? Anyway, the purchasing index, it kind of shows mixed signals for the economy. The HIS market index, a purchasing manager, showed that the U.S. business activity continued to expand. It outpaced a stagnant European economy. As a caveat, the index for manufacturers and service providers, though, eased to 54.4 from a 17-month high of 54.6. The U.S. figure stands in contrast to the euro area, where the index barely stayed positive above a backdrop of resurgent infections. In Japan, you have business activity contracted for an 8-month, Dave.
Yeah, Chris Williamson, who's the chief business economist with the firm who does the PMIs, said the U.S. report adds to signs that the economy will have enjoyed a solid rebound in the third quarter after the second quarter slump. Well, we'll see. Still, he adds, risks seem tilted to the downside for the coming months as businesses await clarity with respect to both the path of the pandemic and the election. There they go again. The index of future activity, while still elevated, declined to a four-month low in August. That composite measure The composite measure of current orders increased to the highest level since February 2019. So, for what it's worth there, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, I don't know where we got about 7 minutes left of the program. I think this is interesting. JP Morgan Chase is moving about 200 billion euros, and that's roughly equal to $230 billion from the UK to Germany as a result of Britain's exit from the EU, and a shift that will make it one of the largest banks in Germany. The U.S. bank plans to finish the migration of the assets to its Frankfurt-based subsidiary by the end of the year. The change could boost its balance sheet enough to become the country's sixth largest bank. Based on the assets of the biggest commercial lenders last year, the assets to be shifted represent slightly less than the 10% of J.P. Morgan's total balance sheet of more than $2 trillion. It also represents almost half of the total assets held by German branches of foreign banks at the end of June. With less than 4 months to go until the Brexit transition period expires, international banks have been beefing up operations in the EU. And, you know, we talked about this, I think it was last week, Dave, where we have banks in Germany that are merging. And yeah. So it's kind of interesting to see that you have J.P. Morgan moving this amount of money also to Germany. So it's kind of interesting that Germany is becoming the spot for
the center of European finance, which in many respects it already has been. In many respects, just probably more spread out. I know J.P. Morgan Chase concerned that if there's a hard Brexit, as it's looking more and more likely there will be, J.P. Morgan's London operations are going to be, I mean, they're essentially going to be landlocked. They won't be able to travel. They won't get passport rights, at least not right away, to other parts of Europe. And given that, the bank told about 200 of its employees in London just last week to move to European cities like Paris, Frankfurt, Milan, and Madrid. But it's not just Brexit driving all this. J.P. Morgan's repeatedly said that its German unit will seek market share in investment banking, corporate banking, and wealth management, essentially going head-to-head with Deutsche Bank. And speaking of Deutsche Bank, just a very quick aside, Melody, I've been reading a fascinating book called Dark Towers, essentially about it's a lurid history of Deutsche Bank in Germany and particularly in the U.S. and the rampant corruption and turning of the other cheek for literally decades now, and the trouble that really could portend for that bank, especially in the U.S. But I hope to finish it when I'm away next week and report back to listeners perhaps soon after that, because I think it tells a number of stories that I think is just a reminder, as you like to say, to keep our eyes wide open. And it's not just this bank, obviously, but this book happens to be about Deutsche. In any event,
we look forward to your book report.
Ah, thank you. Yes, it's been a while since I've done one of those, I must say. So there we go.
And just to end out, you finished up on that?
Yeah.
On that report. So, you know, it's... Yeah, we got about 2 minutes left of the program. Is there anything else like you'd like to touch on?
I'll tell you what, this another one. I mean, I like the stories that make our stomachs crawl, and this one we don't have to go into sort of detail, but talking about the Pentagon you know, getting $1 billion in the first pandemic relief package earlier this year, where funds were supposed to be spent on essential medical supplies needed for the department to help combat the deadly disease at stations all around the world. And that came at a time especially when the U.S. was facing a critical shortage of items, PPE, like the N95 masks. But here's a new report, Melody, that says the Pentagon gave a majority of its billion-dollar aid package to, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, defense contractors to make things like Army uniforms, body armor, and jet engine parts.
Amazing.
Oh, that that's really and some of them to multi-billion-dollar companies like Rolls-Royce, ArcelorMittal. It's a big steel company, actually 5 miles from where I live. Another $80 million awarded to a Kansas company that makes plane parts. Anyway, a third, all told, a third of the funds meant for medical supplies went to these.
And you know, I mean, this isn't the first time we've reported on these stories. Nobody knows where these funds are going and how much is going and who they're going to. And, you know, they were supposed to be all eyes to see. And what have we seen? Nothing. 800-375-4188. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Dave. And until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. In my dreams.